So I want to continue the topic of the last few weeks, which is speech, mindfulness of speaking, right speaking, and such things. And last week was the week that I probably got the closest to talking about the Buddhist teachings on moral speech, the morality of speaking, primarily by focusing on what to avoid to say. And so today I want to talk more about what we're encouraged to say, how we're encouraged to speak. There was an expression, you know, words that hurt and words that heal. So last week it was avoiding the words that hurt. And maybe today the words that heal, or to even do more than healing. And so the Buddha had a variety of teachings about useful ways of speaking, beneficial ways of speaking. And I think central to this topic then is having a vision of what's possible. Avoiding harmful speech has a lot to do certainly with some imagination of what potentially the consequences might be, but it also has a lot to do with empathy. And empathy is really something of the present moment, most part. But empathy also includes imagination, where we imagine ourselves in the other person's shoes. We imagine what the consequences down the line will be. If you're very, very strictly only in the present moment, and only in your own direct immediate experience, as you would be in deep meditation or in retreat, we actually leave behind a part of our humanity. And a very important part of life is also our capacity for imagination. Our imagination gets us into tremendous trouble. But also, I think it's inconceivable to have a wise life, a wise, purposeful life, without some sense of imagination, some creative use of imagination that sees a little bit ahead of what's possible, in a realistic sense of that. So built into Buddhism is a sense of having vision. And in fact, the first experience of awakening in Buddhism is called, sometimes called the path of vision, having a vision. Having an experience, profound experience of awakening or freedom, that then gives a person some tangible understanding of what is possible. It's like getting a hint, and then knowing that hint speaks for a much bigger possibility of a free heart, a compassionate way of being in this world. And so, in terms of speech, then, part of the vision of wise speech, right speech, is a vision of a variety of things, but one is a vision of what's possible for us as an individual as we speak, and also, but maybe more importantly, what's possible in relationship to other people, what's possible to do for them, and what's possible to create in the relationship between people. And so all those three areas, the possibility of speaking in such a way that it supports the best in us, allows something beautiful in us to grow and develop. Speak in such a way that it supports other people and allows something beautiful in them to develop. Maybe heal them, help them, support them, let the best grow out of them. And then speak in such a way that in the relationship between people, there's harmony created, there's concord created, there's goodwill created. There's the ability to cooperate and be honest with each other that's created. There's a story of a man in time of the Buddha who was going to not just test the Buddha, he was going to try to get the better of him by asking him a trick question. And he came to the Buddha and he said, and it was like he called the question a two-horned dilemma, where no matter how you answered the question, you were in trouble. So like, you know, have you stopped beating your wife? Or your, I'm sorry, have you stopped beating your spouse? I'm a slow learner. And, you know, and so it's kind of like difficult question to answer without getting in trouble. And so the So this two-horned dilemma question was, do you, Mr. Buddha, do you ever say anything that is harmful or that's hurtful for other people? And the guy planning this question said, well, if the Buddha says, no, I never do say anything that's hurtful to anyone, then how do you, you know, how does he explain the fact that he criticized this monk, Devadatta, and caused him so much, he was so, you know, ostracized and felt so painful, felt so, you know, hurt. So then, you know, he caught him. But if he says that he does sometimes say things which are hurtful, then how could he be a Buddha? How could he be someone who's awakened and enlightened and all that? So if he says yes, and either he says yes, he's in trouble. If he says no, he's in trouble. I got him. So he goes to the Buddha and says, do you ever say anything that's hurtful for people? And the Buddha says, that question can't be answered with a simple answer. And then the fellow understands that he's been caught. He said, well, I came here to trick you, but you got the better of me. And then the Buddha then goes on to explain that that the Buddha will only speak if what he's saying is true, if what he's saying is beneficial, is useful, and if what he's saying is timely. So it's true, beneficial, and timely in this particular list. And if it's true, beneficial, and timely, and a person feels hurt in hearing it, the Buddha will still say it. The criteria whether someone feels hurt or not is not the criteria for whether you say something or not. The criteria is it true? And is it beneficial? And sometimes it's beneficial to say something that might actually people feel kind of hurt by it or off by it. So for example, being admonished. One of the great virtues in Buddhism is if you can be easy to admonish. Are any of you easy to admonish? Or do you welcome being admonished? Do you welcome someone coming up and giving you some really good feedback? You know, I need to tell you something. Well, so usually when people come up to you that way, you know, the defenses go up. But have you ever gone up to someone and said, you know, I invite you to tell me if I've done anything here that, you know, hurt, caused harm, caused hurt, been inappropriate, please. And I've had friends who are Buddhist monks who, after spending time with me, have said to me, basically invited me, say, you know, if I've said anything or done anything that's been off or caused some harm, please let me know. So the idea of being easy to admonish. And so, you know, it's not, doesn't feel comfortable after being admonished, but I think it can be very, very beneficial. So much so, the Buddha once said, you should treat someone, consider someone who points out your faults to be a treasure. Isn't that great? So, is it true? Is it beneficial? And is it the right time? It might be meant to be beneficial, but it's not the right time to say it. You know, someone has just some of my colleagues, my meditation teachers, who I teach retreats with sometimes. You know, we give these Dharma talks in front of big crowds of people. And some Dharma teachers feel kind of tender after giving a talk. They're kind of very exposed, they're kind of presenting themselves. And some teachers have said explicitly to the rest of us, say, you know, I'd like to get feedback if I was off in my talk or something was wrong or something, but don't do it right away, right afterwards. Why don't you wait till the next day or something? So they invite the feedback, but there's a time for it. So is it true? Is it beneficial? And is it timely, what you're going to say? But then there's another criteria which is found elsewhere in the texts. And that is it kind? Is it metta-ful? Is it done with loving kindness? And that, I think, is an extremely important criteria. So, because kindness includes many different things. Is the manner in which it's given, manner in which it's communicated, is there an expression of friendliness or kindness in what we're saying? Or is it harsh? Is it not an expression of kindness, but really an expression of resentment or self-righteousness or anger or a variety of other things it can be expressive of. So is it kind? Is it true? Is it beneficial? Is it timely? Is it kind? Are generally given as the Buddhist criteria for evaluating what you're about to say. So if you have, so you don't have to do that every time, you say something, pass the salt. But I think there are times when our conversation requires more thoughtfulness, care, what we're going to say. And so then the Buddhist approach is to use those four criteria to evaluate what we're going to say. And so when we look at those four criteria, then, what is the vision that it's trying to fulfill? So the first, is it true? I think that to put aside for a moment a little bit the value of just being true, being honest, in terms of the words, there's a possibility of having a feeling for truth, a feeling for being truthful. There's a difference between knowing what's true and knowing what it feels like for you to be truthful. And so to have a feeling for being truthful. And I've been very inspired by some people I've known who have seemed to have constitutionally incapable of lying. Because there's the feeling, the sense of being truthful is so powerful sense within them that it just feels so off to violate that. And I've known people as they do something like meditation practice that feeling for truthfulness grows within them. Because there's a sense of being more, a greater kind of felt sense of integrity that comes. And that felt sense of integrity then, it feels like that's something you want to preserve, you want to protect, you want to speak from, you don't want to violate, you don't want to give up. So the idea of speaking the truth is not only about, moral thing about being true or logical thing about being true, but it's also to preserve some beautiful thing that I think naturally will develop and come when we do Buddhist practice or do meditation practice. And then there's a feedback loop. As we're more truthful, we then also feed or support or nourish that beautiful part inside of us. So it grows, and as it grows, then we want to be more truthful. So that's and then in terms of truthfulness to other people. I wanted to say as a footnote, I had this beautiful discussion here in this room yesterday in the afternoon with 65 14-year-olds about how truthfulness could be the door to Buddhist practice. Isn't that great? Imagine that, 65 14-year-olds. So it's something you might want to discuss at home or somewhere. How is it that truthfulness is a door to this practice? So partly is what I'm talking about here. And so then, it's also supportive of other people, because if we're truthful, hopefully it resonates with other people. People see that as a possibility, see that as a value. People then begin to trust us as they get a sense that they can trust us with truth. We can be there. And so just it's very powerful to be around people we feel safe with. We know they're going to tell us what's true, what we feel. They're not going to lie or kind of around us. It's very, very powerful and significant to be around that. And it's very unfortunate. Sometimes the people we can be very, very intimate with, sometimes are the ones who can be most motivated to kind of a little bit, twist the truth a little bit. Sometimes because there's, very, very deeply held desires and wishes and understandings somehow are most bumped up against in our intimate relationships. So to be very careful there as well, so that we can safeguard someone else's deep capacity for trust, not just in you, but trust in other people. I've known people who've been lied to, betrayed to, And it took them years before they felt they could trust in some deep way anybody. And then the beautiful thing that happens in relationship to other people, when we're honest with each other, truthfully to each other. I'm a great believer in the value of, when there's conflict, of putting on the table what we believe happened, our perspective is, what our understanding is, and even what our delusions might be, what our inappropriate feelings might be. But to do it in such a way, in an environment where we're being really honest, where there's a feeling of tentativeness, a feeling of, I'm willing to learn here. I might be off. I might not understand. My feelings, my reactions might be off. But if I can put it all on the table, and you put all your things honestly on the table, and then we try to sort through that together, then both of us can grow. Then I might be able to grow. But if I can't put it on the table, if I have to protect that part of myself, then I'm not going to grow. And so sometimes I'll put on the table things which are a little embarrassing to say. But I'd rather be honest about it. I value a group process where two people or a larger group can find their way to the truth if we're being really honest and put it all out. But there has to be an agreement ahead of time that that's what you're going to do. Otherwise, it's a little bit harder to do that process. And then, is it beneficial? There's a saying, cliche, that if you can't improve on silence, then don't speak. Maybe I was thinking maybe next week to give a whole talk on silence. I did it once many years ago. Silence is great, undervalued. And so I've told the story enough times, but I want to tell it again about silence. About buying this building here. The ministers who own this building were an elderly couple who were kind of mystical Christians. And we talked to them for a long time I talked to them a long time on the phone. About almost 9 months, or more than that. But about 9 months on the phone before they showed us the building. They wanted to sell it to us. We were interested. They hadn't even let us inside the building yet. And so we had this wonderful relationship, a lot of warmth. We felt like really connected, these wonderful conversations on the phone. And then after 9 months of like that, they finally were going to show us the building. And so I came about an hour early or something before our board and community were going to come to get a tour of this building here. So just me and the two ministers, a husband and wife. And so, you know, they started walking around, showing me the building, and we were talking about things. And then there started to be little silences in our conversation. And then the silences got to be a little bit longer and longer. It's not a big building to tour, right? And so eventually we kind of walked around the building, and we came back in this main meditation hall. And back then there were all these pews, because it was a church, right? All these wooden pews lined up here. And so we sat down, the three of us, on the front pew. And one of those silences began. And it continued. And it continued and continued. And I don't know how long it was, 5 or 10 minutes, sitting there in silence. No one had said, let's be silent. No one had said, you know, anything about it. But it just felt so right, the three of us. And then it felt so such a wonderful way to meet, actually, to be together. It felt more intimate in some ways than if we kept talking. And then finally, some of the IMC people came to get the tour as well, and so they came in through the door. And so then the three of us got up from our silent sitting, and I snuck over to one of the ministers and said, someday we'll have to continue where we left off. So is it beneficial? And part of the idea of beneficial is to have some care, some of evaluating what is beneficial. It's possible to attack people with the truth. You know, I'm only telling the truth. And that's not beneficial. What's helpful for yourself? What's helpful for the other? What's helpful in the relationship? And what's really helpful? So sometimes avoiding the truth in order to maintain some kind of social harmony, maybe it's not really beneficial. Maybe it continues a dysfunctional relationship, or codependent relationship, or enabling relationship, or all kinds of things. And so sometimes what's beneficial in the short term is painful, is hard, is difficult. So sometimes beneficial is to know to have those difficult conversations. And sometimes what's beneficial is to not say something. I don't think I need to say that. So then, is it timely? Talked about that a little bit. And is it kind? And I think, you know, one of the great delights for me in being introduced to the Theravada tradition and practicing in the Theravada tradition is the great feeling, the great capacity for loving kindness, for metta, for friendliness. You know, I probably was a friendly enough person before I encountered this practice. But something happened in the softening of the hardness of my heart, the defensiveness of my heart, the anxieties of my heart, that allowed something to kind of blossom or bloom that often for me has felt very tender, very warm, very glowing, that has a lot to do with how I feel about other people, certain warmth, friendliness. And to have that grow at times to be a real strength, a real kind of furnace. There are times it feels like a furnace of love or kindness. It comes and goes. But the sense of it being kind of like a glowing furnace that's kind of boundless is something that I learned from this meditation practice here. And so to have that, again, a felt sense of kindness, not an idea of kindness, that, oh, it's good to be kind, but a felt sense of kindness, of warmth, of caring for someone else. And that from that caring then comes our valuation of our speech. Is this caring for this person? Is this friendly for this person? Is this done in a kind way? Is it expressed in a kind way? I have to admonish this person. I have to say something really hard here. It's going to be really tough. It's going to be rocky in our relationship for the next little while. The person's going to be hurt. But can I say it in a way that's kind? That has the person's best interest in mind. These four guidelines are not meant to be moralistic. It's not meant to that you're supposed to kind of put on this heavy yoke of now I have to kind of, boy, you know, I came to Buddhism to get some stress reduction, you know, and to kind of be more relaxed. And now they've thrown this heavy suit of, what is this? Those ascetics, what kind of clothes they wear? Hair shirts. Yeah, this heavy hair shirt of Buddhist morality. What a drag. It's just stress reduction after all. So it's not meant to be moralistic, but it's meant to be part of the strategy of stress reduction. Because if you follow these four guidelines, you'll have a lot less stress. And if you don't follow them, I would probably almost want to guarantee that, I almost want to give you a money back guarantee that if you don't follow them, if you do the opposite, that you'll have a lot more stress in your life. And one of the things a teen said yesterday is, if you tell the truth, you won't have regrets. So those are my thoughts for today. So kind speech, truthful speech, beneficial speech, timely speech, and I think it's worth thinking about. If it doesn't improve on silence, maybe pause a little bit. Not so much because there's some other capacity, possibilities in silence. There's something beautiful that can happen in silence. Maybe wiser words will come out of you. So now it's your turn. So what are your comments, questions, testimonials around this issue of wise speech? Or admonishments? You're welcome to admonish me. Now.
I'm not sure I'm getting the full distinction between beneficial and kind, and I wonder if you could say just a little bit more.
So the difference between beneficial and kind, I think kind is, maybe beneficial could be included under kind, but kind includes the manner in which we say it. So, for example, do we say it in a friendly tone of voice, a gentle way of saying it, or do we say it in a harsh way? It's true, it's beneficial, it's timely, and I'm going to, you know, bark it at you. You know, then it's not kind. So, for example, I think also kind, maybe it includes, you know, beneficial, but kind also takes the other person's situation much more into account. And so are we listening to the other person properly? Are we giving the other person a chance to speak? You know, are we taking the other person into account? Are we feeling the other person? Is there empathy there? That's my thoughts.
I guess in my experience, the only time it makes sense to provide feedback to people is when they actually have approached you and asked for it. That, in my experience, is the only time they really want to listen and hear it. I'd love to get your thoughts on that, if there's another appropriate time.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good guideline, if they invite it. But there are other times when you can maybe, where it's appropriate to say, you know, ask if it's okay. So, you know, I'd like to say something, or are you interested in hearing my perspective on what just happened, or I have some feedback from you. Would you be interested in having some feedback? And then the person might reasonably say, no, not now, or maybe later, or maybe never. Or the person might say, great, yeah, I'd love to have that. But I think being sensitive to whether it's invited or even if it's not explicitly invited, it could be okay in the situation. But being sensitive to whether, careful about whether it's appropriate. And one of the ways to know is to ask.
I'd like to add about saying something, because you think that it's beneficial for the other person to hear it, and then you can reflect on your intentions of why you think it's beneficial for the other person to say it. But sometimes there might be a very truly beneficial reason for people to hear your feedback, for their safety or
yes,
some other reason.
And there can be different conflicting benefits sometimes. So there could be that it might be beneficial for, I don't know what, it's, you know, if you're making chocolate cake, it might be beneficial to for the cake if the person would mix the batter a little bit better. And so, it might be beneficial for your relationship not to say it. Or it might be beneficial for their learning on their own experimentation and learning, for them to actually do the experiment and learn, find out for themselves. And maybe they know really well they're not mixing it well. Maybe they think, oh, I'm going to see how well I can manage. So that's a silly example, but sometimes there's a conflicting benefits, and so we should kind of consider the variety of things going on before we decide what's beneficial.
I guess we're kind of covering this topic a little bit, but I'm always conflicted about, a lot of times, feeling like, oh my God, if I don't say something, that's not the right thing to do. But, you know, not sort of being in the headlights like that, a lot of times I don't have time to think what's the right thing to say. So, you know, when you're sort of taking your place in a conflict, for example, you know, like especially with this, you know, past election season, I found myself in a situation where I was like, oh my God, if I don't say something right now, it's really, I'm going to feel really bad. I'm going to feel, but then I didn't, you know, it just kind of didn't have time to figure out what was the really dharmic thing to say, and, mm-hmm. and then kind of getting in a fight with people. But so maybe, I don't know.
Yes, could you hear that? There was thought there. You couldn't know. So what to do? What to do if in the you know, how do you know what's beneficial or how to speak wisely or when to speak in the middle of conflict? Something which seems to require something in the moment right now. I think that one of the important areas, things about conflict, any kind of conflict, is to be prepared. Is to prepare oneself, or train oneself ahead of time. So learn, for example, write speech techniques. So, for example, some people like to do training in nonviolent communication, where it becomes almost a habit or second nature to consider, you know, to learn how to speak. For example, you might learn to say, you know, this is really hard for me to say, but let me. I'm not going to tell you what's true here, but let me tell you first why I'm so conflicted, or why I'm so troubled, or why it's so hard for me to deal with this particular issue right now. So rather than going into the conflict, step back and say, you know, I don't feel safe right now, or I think I need a moment to think about it, or are you really interested in what I really think here? You know, so there's a variety of things to learn, skills to learn, and so there are trainings to take in speaking. So if you plan ahead that way and train yourself, then you're more likely to know what to say in the middle of the heated conversation. But if you don't haven't trained yourself, prepared yourself, then you're kind of caught.
Usually, when I start thinking of having a truthful conversation, I'll look at my intentions, and the benefit is for me.
What do you do next?
Well, I look at it to see if silence is the best path. I do examine that.
Uh-huh.
And it usually is.
Great. That's a great reflection and a great observation. What other options does a person have when they see, oh, this is truth, but I'm going to say it because it benefits me? So certainly one option is to be silent. What other options might be in that situation? I'm asking everyone, not just you. But yes?
Admit that you're saying this for your own benefit.
So one option is just to say it. I'm going to say something, but it's for my own benefit. And the advantage of that is it allows the other person to participate. And then maybe you can be a discussion about, well, I do care about you. Maybe it's okay. It's beneficial for you. I'll do that for you. Or maybe we can step back and take a bigger picture on this and understand it more widely. Other ideas?
Well, it's not necessarily bad that it's going to be in your benefit. It's not, you can consider those other criteria.
Right. So it's not necessarily bad that it's for your own benefit, but then you can consider the other criteria in addition to that. Great. Yes?
I always find, keep in mind attachment to views, opinions, and beliefs.
So always keep in mind attachment to views, views, beliefs, opinions. Mm-hmm. It's always good. Yeah.
If I have the presence of mind to do this, look inside my own body and see where there's an upwelling or a tenseness or an openness, and that's a pretty good clue as to whether I can follow my own body. Whether I'm about to say something.
That's what George Bush did.
So
he claims with his big abilities, George W. Bush, my gut
feeling. Yeah.
During this political time, I have many times felt like I have had to use a very quick criteria because a conversation or something would be said with a stranger or that didn't allow for a lot of time So my criteria has been, am I going to bite on the bait or am I going to throw the bait? So I don't want to bite and I don't want to bait. So many times I just have to say nothing. And so that's been, especially in the political arena, because I have felt so much passion about the subject, but that if I throw the bait and somebody bites, I know that I initiated that tangle that we're going to get into. So that's just been a quick little something I have to kind of pay attention to. And the first time I tried it, it didn't work.
Great. Thank you. So one more, because we're about to stop, but maybe I saw your hand.
One of the things that I find that I do frequently in my relationships and in my work is I will use some of these words that represent, truth or beneficial or whatever. But rather than speaking what I think as to whether what is happening or what they're saying is true, is say, well, do you think that's true? Or do you think that that is beneficial? Or is there another option, another way we could look at this?
Good. Yeah. So that's very nice. So leave it a little more open-ended or tentative so that other people can participate in the exploration together. So I want to end with mentioning four categories of words or speech which can often be beneficial in many different directions. And so the first one is to say thank you. The second one is to ask someone how they are. How are you? To really mean it. And the third is to say, what do you need? And the fourth is to say, I'm sorry. Those are great, great things to say. So, and the last thing to say that's often very helpful to end today with is to say hello to someone. And so I guess we're having the tea today. Is that right? So some of you will stay and some of you are new. So if we can do it without getting too loud in here, I think it would be great if those of you who sat near someone who you don't recognize, if you would turn to them and say hello and introduce yourself and before we all scatter in our ways. So thank you all very much.